Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. I was just talking with our engineer, Seth, and he told me that he got a late start. And I guess it's because the show before us is every other week now. And so there was nothing on, I presume, the week right before us on this station anyway. And that was an odd occurrence, and so he kind of lost track. But we're going to go until approximately, oh, give or take about 18 minutes or so after the hour. So we're going to, we got a lot of time. That's great. And, so let's be thankful for that. And thanks for waiting. I assume you did the extra 3 minutes here before I got on. Because, of course, I couldn't get on any faster than they can turn me on. That's part of the problem. And I'm long ways away from where they are, actually close to 1,000 miles away, or 800 or whatever it is. All right, so let's talk about tonight's show. I thought we'd deal with the subject of the metaphysics of physical longevity. And that's a mouthful. You know, as usual, it's one of those shows the title doesn't tell you that much because you go, uh-huh, what? Yeah. So let me define what I'm talking about, as I usually try to do at the beginning. And there's most people that I meet and know want to live a long time, because they usually don't tell me why, but they want to live a long time. I think it's because they're afraid that something terrible is going to happen when they stop physically living. But there may be other reasons besides. And part of their, we'll say, desire is to not only live a long time, but to, many people call it, to be healthy. But I think they really mean to be young enough in their ability to do things that they can carry out their life in a fashion that they so desire to do so. And in some cases, people, through some vanities and other factors, also want to appear to be younger as well. I probably fall in that category. I always like to look in the mirror and say, ah, there's the guy. You know, and so people have these some people will call them desires. Others have other factors that may come into play as well. And the question sometimes arises, okay, I hear you do that commercial, you know, for that product, you know, ideal cell sorption, whatever it is, resveratrol, blank, blank, blank. Okay, yes, I do that, and I also take it. But the more important thing, and that's not all I take. I take all kinds of vitamins and nutrients and stuff. But the most important element to this is, let's say that stuff does do what it's supposed to do, which is to extend life probably in the 30 to 50% range. That's a lot. It may even, for some people and some animals, under specific circumstances, it could even come close to doubling life expectancy. But that's different than living that way in perfect health and having all the things like, you know, you'd be 120, but you don't feel a day over 55 or 60. That would be pretty good for a lot of people anyway. And so that's not necessarily what anything can do right now, for sure. Although the product that I mentioned, it probably gets as close as you're going to come to it. But there's more to it than all that. Because I guess the major question to this is, how come we don't live forever? I mean, after all, who came up with this idea that after the X amount of time, that's it? You know, the thing burns out, goodbye. You know, we're gone. And I think most people at this point, unless they're extremely young, or maybe a little bit off, you know, off tilt a bit, know that you eventually are going to die. I mean, it doesn't matter what you do, you're going to be gone, right? Death is an inevitability from the physical world. Now, that's not absolute death in general. I'm not talking about death of consciousness. I'm talking about death of the physical form. So if death in the physical world is an absolute, how come? And I think that's what I want to start with in definition. I'm talking about a problem that exists while we are physically alive. And that problem is not about us per se as a person, as much as it is us as a object, an energy field, which I'll describe in a couple minutes, that surrounds a physical mass that together develops the ability to keep itself in a certain type of form, which we recognize in the mirror anyway, and that wards off all kinds of other kinds of attacks from other kinds of energies and forms that are continually around us, inside of us, everywhere. And also chemistries and other factors, including physics phenomena, et cetera, that destroy this form that has to constantly keep itself repairing and also at the same time rejuvenating as best as it possibly can under this tremendous stress, we'll call it. Now you can say, okay, well, if all that's going on, which it is, by the way, then how come that's the case? Why can't we just like seal ourselves up in a hermetically, you know, whatever, and not have any of this problem? Well, first of all, that's not really possible because some of it's inside of us. We have trillions of kinds of living life forms in us that aren't us. Bacteria and all kinds. It gets kind of gross, I know. But all this stuff is having an effect on us. And the air we breathe, believe it or not, actually is, well, it's necessary to develop energy. You've got to have oxygen to develop energy under the way that we tend to use energy. We have to create heat, and the oxygen is a burning mechanism. But as it burns things up, it burns us up. It isn't as though it's completely innocuous. It's actually having a negative effect on us, even though we have to have it in order to create movement within ourselves. So the very act of moving creates a degradation in what's going on in terms of our body's ability to keep its form and keep its form intact and have the same kind of form almost replicated instant. So it looks like us a year from now, pretty much like us, as it did before. So we continue to exist, we think, the way we were, although there is a continuous changing in the process. And so it's a fascinating idea that I'm going to talk tonight about the metaphysics of physical longevity, assuming that there is something we can, or some things we can do about this, but there's also limitations. All right, so I said I was going to get to it, and let me talk about this. Surrounding us is an energy field, and that energy field is electromagnetic. That's not to say that we're like some kind of television set or electric motor or magnetic system or something. Not at all, actually, because this electromagnetic field is in a different phase from the field that most things that we consider electromagnetic are in. The microwave is in a certain phase. So is television waves. And so is almost everything else that we know about is electromagnetic. It's really in a phase that I call the inorganic range of non-living electromagnetic energies. But there are actually organic phased energies that are for living things that surround all life forms that, by our definition, are alive. And the electromagnetic part of a human being or any other life form is the part that really produces what we call life. Now, how does it do that? It does that by, if you recall me saying it so a few minutes ago, it does so by allowing energy to move inside and outside of us in a free-flowing kind of ebb and flow. And as long as this movement is going on, which is very similar to and in syncopation with our heartbeat, it produces what we call a living being. So when your heart stops and when you stop breathing, this electromagnetic ebb and flow starts to wane significantly, and within a few minutes to no more than probably an hour, you're dead, if it stops completely. Now, one of the things that slows down the process is if you lower the rate of the energy flow, which is called lowering the temperature of the body. So if you lower the rate of the energy flow of this movement of energy inside and out of you, you can live a lot longer with none of the electromagnetic field enlivening the body and the heart not beating, the brain not having any kind of signals going on. Nothing's going on, it appears. But yet you could be brought back to life. Bet you didn't know that before, right? Okay. Now you could say, oh, how does he know that? I've never read that in any medical book or anything. Well, because they don't know about this electromagnetic field, and you have to put 2 + 2 together to figure it out. And they're still working on 1 + 1 as far as most of science is concerned. That's why I call it the metaphysics of physical longevity, not the physics. Physics would be that they already know about it. They don't know about it. So I'm just telling you how it works. And you don't have to believe what I'm saying, but if you can come up with a better system, you let me know. Well, then we can have a discussion about it. That explains what life is. All right, by the way, if you've read anything I've written, you already know some of the stuff. Or if you heard some of my prior shows, you probably know it. So I'm not saying, I may be preaching to the choir, as they say. There's maybe a number of you out there who say, well, I know that. I listen to show number blank blank. I just, you know, okay, that's fine. There's a lot of people who are listening and who haven't heard all that stuff before. So to them, this is new, and that's cool. That's great. Okay, so let's go on. Let's go on and talk about this. Okay, so this electromagnetic field that is producing this effect, it's a wonderful thing, has a problem in itself. You can say, well, what could that be? And that is the electromagnetic field is affected by other energy fields. It isn't in a quote-unquote vacuum, if there could be such a thing. And so it's constantly being drawn upon by other electromagnetic fields, but not ones like your microwave. Although those could be pretty serious if you stick your head in a microwave, if you could do it anyway, and turn it on, which you shouldn't be able to do, of course, with the safety things. But nonetheless, it would be very dangerous to do. But even more incipient and behind the scenes going on is that the electromagnetic field of all other life is having either a positive or negative effect upon us every second we exist. Now I'm going to tell you the secrets. If you want it to have a positive effect, you've got to be giving to life and helping life to grow more. Not your life, other life. And then what happens is their electromagnetic fields have less and less of a negative effect on your electromagnetic field. And guess what happens? You live longer and you look a little younger in the mirror, too. But if you do the opposite, and if you're doing things that really upset the apple cart and really screws up the electromagnetic field of others, guess what happens to your electromagnetic field? Yeah, you got it. That's it. Yeah. And things start wearing out real quick because the yin and the yang, the amount of chi that's moving through the system in a certain frequency in a certain way becomes irregular, becomes forceful, becomes withheld in many respects. And you have, in a feng shui sense, a lot of bad chi. The energy gets so screwed up on this field that is around us that it has a negative impulse upon the physical system. And the physical system becomes victimized then by all kinds of other things like bad bacteria and viruses, and any negative thing in the environment is going to have a more negative effect. Even if you just bump yourself, bruise yourself, it's going to have much more negative effect when this electromagnetic field is not working in correct sync. Mm-hmm. And that's caused by your choices. It's caused by how you think, how you function, mostly how you behave, but still, all those things come to play. And that starts, I hope, getting some people thinking, hey, maybe that's why this guy keeps talking about creating virtue being a good thing for us. And it is. It's a great thing. Okay. So I hope that bits and pieces of all this is starting to come together so that we can understand the metaphysics behind physical longevity. Because this is a lot deeper than anything presently known in the field of biology, or we'll call it the field of life sciences, because life sciences are based so much on the inorganic effects of energy that they end up in a box. They can't explain most of what happens when people age, when they don't age, or when they come up with obscure theories, but most of those don't hold any water. They don't work out to be true. And that's because they don't know the real truth. Maybe some of them are listening right now. If you're listening, hello out there. You know, you can call in if you want to. You can even tell me I'm crazy. But the point is that this is another theory to look at. There are other people that have examined this. A guy named Wilhelm Reich. They thought he was crazy. He, in the 1950s, and before that, he was actually a very well-known person until he started doing things that really scared people, because he started to understand this life energy and started monkeying around with it and doing some crazy stuff with it. And he called it orgone energy. And you might say, well, what's that? Well, it's a kind of, he was monkeying around with this life energy. He figured out ways to manipulate it, and it caused changes. He aimed it at things like, he got it out of sync, and then he aimed it at things like radioactive objects. He created, his whole laboratory turned into a radioactive waste plant, and they had to go in and mop it up and get him out of there. And they thought he was doing some weird science. They didn't even know how he did this. He was using very low-grade medical forms of radioactive stuff, which shouldn't be dangerous. The next thing you know, his whole place is glowing. They actually threw him in prison for it. They don't know to this day how he did what he did, but I'm telling you what he did. And he also did weird things with clouds and you name it. He just did strange stuff. But what was he really doing? He was investigating the energy of life itself. He actually discovered that he could control the longevity and the vitality of cells in a microscope. He could even create cells, so to speak. Things became alive that didn't seem to be alive. Things died that seemed they shouldn't die. He did a lot of stuff like that. Okay, well, we'll move off of him. But I do want you to know that there have been people in the past that have been trying to tell us that this sort of stuff really exists. I don't think they had it maybe so well put together, maybe even as I'm explaining it. That's not to give myself a pat on the back. It's just a reality that I think I have to say. And that may be the reason, at least back in those days when they were talking about it, and even the people who say it today maybe, don't have they aren't putting it all together enough so that other people find it believable. Hopefully I'm doing a better job than that, because I think I do understand it. I think I do. But then again, we'll see. Okay, so we have this energy field around us. It's in a phase. That's a direction of the energy. That's way different than what we're used to measuring. As a matter of fact, they don't even know, although the scientists have said everything has a phase, they don't know what the real phase is of inorganic electromagnetic energy. Nobody's ever measured truly what the phase relationship is of television waves to this wave or that wave. They don't. They measure the amplitude and the frequency, but they don't measure the phase, not on any kind of basis that I've read. Now, it's very important to know this phase, and I've written about what the numbers are if you want to look in Life's Hidden Meaning about that. It's important to know it, because if it's right, then instead of having negative chi, you have positive chi, and you start developing a very strong life energy that affects everybody else around you. But you can only do that by focusing out and giving to others and helping them to do the same in themselves and for others. Now, this gives me another thought. I wanted to bring it up. It's sort of an aside, but tonight we have more time, so what the heck? And that is that I was thinking that it would really be interesting. I know that the progressives, that's the Democrats who are kind of super liberal, maybe even a bit on the Marxist side, and they want to raise the taxes and redistribute wealth and all this business. If you're listening to the news, you might have heard that. But the point is, I was just thinking, wouldn't it be kind of cool if with all these higher taxes that we have, and even more coming, by the way, why don't we make it that people only have to pay half of all the taxes that are around them, provided that for two other people, they help those people to double their ability to earn an income, whatever income they're at. But it has to be someone who is struggling. So it has to be below a certain level. I wouldn't call it poverty, but below maybe the lowest form of middle class, whatever you want to call it. So anybody is an example who's making less than $20,000 a year. It depends where you live, though. So, you know, in New York, that would be very bad. But, you know, in some places, it may not be so bad. But $20,000 a year, if you make less than $20,000 a year, if you have a family more than that, maybe, I don't know. Then if someone helps you, and then one other person, two people, they help two people, see, to double their income, then they only have to pay half for their taxes. And if they can prove that they did that, they just have to get sworn statements that everybody has to prove that they did it in some respect. I mean, you don't have to go to the third degree on the thing, but, you know, you got to go somewhere. And I just think that would be so neat. I would like you to think about that. Just what are those ideas that just hit me the other day? And I was listening to a news program about progressive taxes going way high end. I said, what would happen if you did that? Well, actually, you would get more money if you were the government than the other way. And in the long run, you would raise the standard of living for the people who are in the lowest elements of society the most. And everybody would be helping everybody else. The wealthiest people would be out trying to help the poorest people. I think that's pretty cool. And you have to do this. You have to do it. You have to be involved in it in some way. Of course, there'll probably be people hiring themselves out as surrogates to help. But maybe that's okay. We need more employment, right? Get a lot of people employed that way. You know, the surrogates will be helping the people. They still have to pay them, of course. And so it'd still be probably a fair match. And after all, it would be a free market system, which is what everybody seems to be hankering for that doesn't like the progressives. And I think free market systems generally do work. Generally do. Okay, well, as long as there's no monopolies. All right, so let's go on to the next part of the discussion. You might say, where did he go with that? I don't know. Listen, I was just thinking about it. I just thought I'd throw it out there. I like people thinking. You know what I say? A little more thought in the world is a good thing. So the metaphysics of physical longevity seems to be very much interdependent upon this energy field that we live within. And if we keep that part as close as possible to God's face, we've got it made. Because at God's face, let me tell you what happens. At God's face, the energy that is within the field does not degrade, period. You don't grow old at all. Zero. Sound like a good deal? Now, I guess if you're 5 years old, you're listening to this, you're going to say, no, I don't like that at all. I want to grow up. No. You don't grow old beyond, say, 25 to 30 years old. I'll give you that age range, all right? That's the age you can stay at. You got to grow up before you don't grow old. All right? Okay. And there's a reason for that, too. I'm not going to go into the specifics about that part, but there really is a metaphysical reason for that. Okay, so once you mature in a spiritual sense, sometime, generally speaking, around 28, but we'll say 25 to 30 years old in terms of the way we look or whatever, then at that point, you stop aging. If you can keep the phase, the direction of the energy movement that is going in and out of you, and that is directing everything that's going on about you, at the phase of God. And the number for that is actually in, again, that book I wrote. So, but the number doesn't help you because it isn't like you're going to take out your God phase meter and see if it's pointing in the right direction. You know, interestingly, that could be made. I think I'm going to start working on that. I think that could become quite popular. Could you imagine that? Everybody gets a little meter, and they look at the meter and they say, oh, I'm out of phase by 9 degrees and blah, blah, blah. And they know just how much they're growing older than the whole thing. It actually could be done. I'll have to think about how exactly, though. But I do believe it's actually possible to do it. Okay, first you have to be able to sense this energy, which right now most of science cannot sense. But after you can sense it, you can measure it, obviously. So if you can get yourself to function that way, then nothing grows older inside of you. Wow. Talking about amazing stuff. I'm going to tell you some things about cells in a minute, but that's really fantastic. There's a little glitch, and I'm going to tell you about that now. The glitch is that although you can stay young indefinitely, the energy that is doing the job for us, and part of it is permanently connected to us. Part of it moves freely through us and goes, and blah, blah, blah. But there really is an energy that is permanently connected to us. It rejuvenates itself every 7 years. It takes and makes it like a carbon copy and does things like that. But it, nonetheless, it is staying with us. That energy can only stay with us 7 times in a row and in 3 different ways. And so there's a numerical limit on what it can do. And beyond that, even if it wants to follow God, it can't, God's direction, it won't be able to sense it anymore. It loses that sense. So we have a limitation. And you might say, well, what's the limitation? Well, it's really, if you want to multiply it out, it's 3 times 7 times 7, or it's 7 times 7 times 3. It's the same thing. It comes out to 147 years. We got 147 years that we can live for before this energy can no longer perfectly, no matter how well we live, no matter how virtuous we live, no matter how much you follow my plan of having your taxes by helping 2 people and do all that stuff right. You have to do a little more than that, by the way. But no matter what you do, you've got to, after 147 years, you got to let this energy go, and then you can't maintain who you are. Now, you could say, well, I'm going to stay longer. Well, then the energy is going to start moving further and further away from God's phase anyway, because you have to become more and more selfish after 147 to keep the energy that needs to go, you see. So it's sort of like the absolute. After 147 years, you're going to start growing older, and sometime after that, I can't tell you exactly when, you'll die. But if you're going to try to stay as perfect as possible, you'll give it up by 147 anyway. Now, a lot of people say, 147? Who's lived to be 147? How do you know? Well, probably some biblical figures. And at times, not in recorded history, but if we go back a long, long time ago, I mean, you know, like a million years ago, on a place that, is it in the history books? I call it Atlantis. You can call it whatever you want. During that period of time, people could live, and some did live, to just about that age. And that's a long time by our standards even today. It's a long time. So I hope I haven't confused you with all this, because there's a lot of information in what I'm giving you. And I'm telling you a lot of whys tonight. Even if you've heard my earlier shows, you haven't heard this many whys, right? I don't think so. I give out a lot, but this is a lot more. And so hopefully this is enriching those who have heard some of this before. I hope it is. All right, so you can't live forever, because the energy field that makes us who we are, it incorporates elements of our personality. It keeps us looking like who we believe we should look like, and many other things. It even keeps our brain intact so that we can remember events in time and space, because the brain is really like a giant library, you might say. It does all those things. If you want to have everything working up to maximum, the absolute time you can live is 147 years. But now let's talk about the cells. The cells show this very effect. The average cell has a life cycle of about 9 months, right in the gestation period of having a baby. And that's not coincidental, by the way. And so if you take that into account and you start multiplying out the times of the cell, it's been discovered that most cells have a replacement cell. We have names for these replacement cells, but the most important thing is they have a replacement cell that was made at birth, at conception, actually, right after conception. So even if a cell goes through the most amount of replications without using resveratrol and certain other substances, the longest it can go for is about 50 cycles of reproducting. And each cycle gets more and more imperfect depending upon how imperfect the energy field is that is controlling the chi energy that enlivens it. So 50 cycles and it has one replacement. What do you think that adds up to? For a lot of people, it adds up to the average life expectancy for people right now who are living. That's right. And some people do a lot better than that, though. Some people are actually living up to beyond 100 years old. That means that they're getting a longer time before the cells wear out. They may get a few more cycles on regeneration. Some people are very short. Some people are down into the 30s. That's very short. And if they're really living selfishly, 30 times 9 months times 2 is not that much. You know, you start getting down to the point where you're looking at about a 40 to 50-year life expectancy for some people. So you can see that aging is a very specific, and it is totally controlled by the person in terms of who they are and what they are. You can say, well, what about the genetics? The genetics are there too, but the genetics are karma the person brings in with them. So it's still the person. It's still based upon who and what that soul and its prior personalities have created. Okay, now what happens if you get rid of the stop sign? What happens if you eliminate the number of times that the cell can reproduce? Well, there's a drug but I think the government's about to do that. There's a drug, or we'll call it a nutrient, that can do that. That's resveratrol, along with certain other substances that help as well. And if you use that, and you use the right stuff, the right kind, the stop sign goes away. The telomeres, some people call them telomeres, at the end of the gene start to grow back. And that's what seems to cause the stop sign to start coming, is this breakdown in the genes. And so eventually, if you take this herbal formula long enough, the cell will keep reproducing. Now, it's going to still have imperfections in it. It's not going to be perfect. And the amount of imperfections is based, again, upon your own field. So resveratrol can lead to a lot more cycles of reproduction of the cell. But it isn't going to eliminate all aging unless a person really is virtuous and living in God's light. And then the phase of their field, or auric field, becomes we'll say, matching performance with that of their co-creator, their creator. And they will not age and may even go backwards. They may start looking younger rather than older. We've got a dog. It's going backwards. Now, she's been getting some resveratrol, and she's gotten pretty old. For her breed, she was actually quite old. But she's several years or more younger today than she was a little over a year ago when she started taking her resveratrol. that's pretty remarkable because the dog doesn't know what the heck she's doing. She's just taking her, she's just eating her food, right? And we sprinkle a little of this stuff on it. And, you know, and she's doing great. She's younger. It doesn't mean she's going to live forever. She steals food from the other dogs. So every time she does that, she's got a little more negative energy. We're trying to break her of that, but she's been doing it a long time. In her defense, she was taken out of a place where the other dog stole food from her for years. This happened. And then when she finally got free from that and was taken in, unfortunately, she got that bad behavior because she fears that she's not going to get enough food to eat. But even that behavior does cause her to have some aging, believe it or not. Even animals are responsible to not be virtuous and not being virtuous, amazing as it seems. That's why we are there to try to help them. You can't always change an old dog and give them new tricks. You can try. And we do. Okay, so we're just about out of time for this half or so of the show. And I want you to start thinking about everything I said, because I'm going to tell you a whole bunch of other stuff about how to really live longer and how we can, by understanding how this process works, we can work with it to really make it to our advantage instead of, as most people are, fighting it in a losing way and producing a lot of forces in their life and a lot of illness and a lot of problems that are going to only make them miserable. So hopefully when we come back, I'll give you some of that, and I hope that it'll make some sense to you. And we should be back in, give or take, 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about the metaphysics of physical longevity. That's a mouthful. Say it three times. And so I hope you heard the first part of the show, because this is one of those shows where if you didn't get the first part, the second part might be a little hard to understand. Hopefully you got the first part. So let's continue on from where we're going. And we now know what the problem is. And I've given you some of the reasons you can't just, you know, say, well, I'm going to be a good person and live forever, because you're not going to live forever. Physical, I want to preface everything I'm going to say from this point forward with this. Physical life is the hardest life you can live. It is not the end of consciousness when you die. Consciousness actually increases to some extent in virtually everybody who dies from the physical world. And they enjoy a easier and, to some extent, a more conscious life. It's easier to give. It's easier to give with others who are giving. And there's less people pulling on and pushing on your electromagnetic field that is keeping you alive. So the rate of decline of both life itself and form decreases in a relative sense. So in relative terms, you live a longer life in the next life after this one, and you live usually healthier than you did while you were physically alive. There are exceptions to this, of course, because it's up to us to choose how we live, and we can really choose to live quite badly if we want to. At any rate, so the idea that in some way we should fear physical death is nonsense, but of course I realize a lot of people do. And then in addition to that, the idea that we should desire to be physically alive because there's some innate joy or great wonderment in being physically alive is not true. The reason we should want to be physically alive is for our sacrifices, because this is the life that is most difficult for us to live, and it is the life that requires the most amount of tension of our soul to try to improve, because this world sucks. It's a really bad place. It's got a lot of trouble. And I'm talking about Earth itself now. Not all planets are like Earth. Earth is one of the worst. And we've got a lot of problems. And so we come here as souls. We know that we're going to incarnate in this particular realm, on this world. And we say, gee, we're pretty good at this. Believe it or not, even the worst of us are probably better than some of the average folk in the universe. That, now, how could I think that with so many terrible people running around? Well, because they still are on Earth. The best, not the worst, came to Earth. I know that's hard to understand. But a soul, when it chooses to come here because it believes it can contribute something. And only the souls that have the wherewithal to deal with such a hostile, terrible planet are going to give it a shot. If you understand what I'm saying now. Earth is really a kind of like a great laboratory. Now, there are more primitive planets, but they aren't as hostile or negative as Earth is. Earth is a really, really nasty place, and this is a place where a lot of souls have come to try to get things back into a better place. Does that mean that everyone on Earth is great and grand and wonderful? No, we've got some evil ones here, and those don't have souls. Now, that's a different thing. They have a group soul called Cosmic Evil. But they're like soulless beings. And I wouldn't even call them human beings. And they're in a new, we'll say their own group, own species. And they are choosing to be destructive to the life forms of others by interfering with the phase of all others and trying to get people to turn away from God. Right, either convincing us that God doesn't exist, or if it does, it must be some terrible creature, because after all, there's so much suffering in this world. Evil really tries to convince us that we don't have to suffer. We can live in absolute bliss and euphoria and utopia if only we would permit it to control and govern us. Like so many dictatorial, tyrannical, evil ones want to do. Now, I have to warn you about this, that they are doing some of that, regardless of whether you are trying and are succeeding to some extent in living a virtuous life if you live in a country that has problems, if you live in Venezuela, you live in Iran, you're being forced in many different ways to be less creative towards God, less co-creative with God. There's many, many things you will be compromising about. And even in the United States, this is starting to happen. So be careful, because we are here to fight this and to prevent it from continuing, among other things. Fighting is only part of it. There's a lot more than that. When I say fight, I don't mean in a physical sense necessarily, unless someone's physically attacking you. But I'm talking about fighting in a more mental sense, okay? With astral issues, emotional issues, and also layered into that. All right, so what are we going to do then? How do you physically going to live longer by getting your aura or the electromagnetic field that is around you to be in as close as possible to be in phase with God? Well, first of all, you have to want to live the life I'm going to talk about for a reason other than wanting to live longer. I know that's a real bad one. Yeah, so it's that paradox again. You can't want to live physically longer for its own sake because it doesn't work. Because then you're being self-focused, you're being selfish about whatever you're doing, and the results are going to be relatively negative. You've got to really want to give to others for the sake of giving. However, if you remember what I said, I threw that out kind of as a little red herring. What I said towards the beginning of the show about what if we had a tax situation where people could lower their taxes by helping everybody else to raise their income that we had a relatively low income. Well, wouldn't that be wrong motive then? Because you were to be doing it to lower your taxes. Well, kind of. You see, I think in that process, people would start finding that there is an inherent benefit and gift in helping other people, even if their taxes weren't lowered. But regardless, I'm saying you got to start somewhere, and that's a very interesting proposition. You get people giving, and they have to give in ways that really help others, and those others then, therefore, could do the same if they choose to. Because remember, as you raise other people's income, they're going to want to pay less taxes too, so they're going to want to start giving to people who are struggling. So you can see how this could really magnify. And again, it's only a start, because you can't use it as a true motive to help somebody in the long run to become physically healthier and live longer. Because then the process is dependent upon not wanting to do it for that purpose, but rather wanting to do it because you want to become a co-creator with God. You want and feel and desire to be one with God and one with all the other goodness in the world. Okay, so how do you get that going? I mean, okay, I said we could kind of kickstart it on a very low level with some kind of tax manipulation situation. But how do you get it going for real? I mean, how do you get it going where it's self-motivated? People are really doing it because this is what they truly seek. And the answer to that is through expanding consciousness. What does that mean? It means that people have to use the knowledge they have in new and more expansive ways to, in some way, grow all others, or grow all of the life, make life seemingly abundant and increase by the fact that they are using that which they already know, but in greater and more creative ways to help all of the life. And how does that come about? Well, it's sort of what I just said a minute or two ago. As soon as a person experiences that, they experience their own consciousness growing, and they eventually experience joy. It makes their life joyful to do it. And then it doesn't matter how much they save on their taxes. The joy is worth far more than all the taxes they could save in the world. They don't know that before they do it. Okay, I'm going to admit to that. I don't think they do. I don't think they necessarily have a clue what consciousness is before they grow it. But people can still grow their consciousness, even though that isn't necessarily what they're aiming to do. And sometimes that's the only way they can grow their consciousness is when they're not trying to do it. They have to eventually do this because they seek to give, because it is one of the most wonderful of all experiences to do so, provided the giving is wise and helps those that are being given to give wisely themselves. If that is done, then you don't have to worry about wrong motive. You don't have to worry about the system collapsing on itself because people are getting more and more selfish. The opposite will happen, and it works. You have to have a free market system of some sort for this to happen, by the way. Believe it or not, utopian models such as socialism and particularly Marxism don't work because they are unwise in giving and because the model is not about God but about some group of people, usually, sometimes a tyrant or a series of tyrants, who think they know better than God, who think they can replace God with their own ideas and own thoughts. And the only way you get to know God is by helping to co-create with God. You're not going to get to know God by sitting down with, you know, yourself and say, gee, I'm God, and this is the way I want things to be. And that's not being God. God wants freedom. Freedom of thought and freedom for people to co-create themselves. So you remember that because it's very important in the principles of the rest of the show and all the other factors that are necessary in physical longevity. What I'm telling you is the people who live the longest, and I want you to check this out, the people who live the longest and have the youngest and most vibrant lives during that time are the people who are the most co-creative. They're most creative to begin with, but they're co-creative in the sense that they are creating virtue in themselves and in others at the same time. And they're doing so in infinite variety of ways. There's no single path, believe me. It's just the opposite. If there were a single path, it would not be virtuous. It would not be free because it wouldn't really be creative. If every path is creative, then every path is different. So you have to be different. You have to accept the fact that your life is going to be different than all other lives. You have to accept the fact that in being co-creative, the dark side is going to see you as a target. And it's going to want to really see go after you because it sees you as the greatest threat. Those that are darkest attack those that are most in light. Remember that. They try to cause the light to go away because they're against God. And if you're co-creating with God, you're with God. So guess who's going to be against you? Don't expect life to be copacetic and easy. It may be. It could be. But it isn't necessarily going to happen that way. I'm not saying that it has to be that you're going to live some kind of life of terror and torture. There's lots of factors that enter into this, including karmic. But nonetheless, do be prepared that at some points, not every day necessarily, your life is going to be very difficult. For people who are significantly raising their consciousness and significantly trying to create virtue, that's a different story. They can expect a more stressful life, a more difficult life, one in which there's going to be a target on them for sure as far as evil is concerned. But beyond that, they're going to be so far ahead of the fray that their electromagnetic fields are so much different from everybody else's, different being better because they're closer to God, that everyone else has some upsetting factor in them. Everyone else is in some way causing a more negative effect on them than most other people. You didn't know that, I know. So it's tough if you really put yourself ahead of the game, so to speak, in consciousness. The payback is this. The payback is that you go on from into other dimensions of time and space where you really move ahead and life is not so horrible as it might be here. Here is where it's the most difficult. Because it is here that the stress and strains of this system comes out so difficult, so with so much difficulty for those who are advancing. So remember that if you're finding your life particularly difficult at this time, possibly because you are creating a lot of virtue or trying to. And the process is such that there is a unfortunate, we'll say, upfront cost in the first part of life, you know, for a personality in its cycle. And that upfront cost is that the physical life becomes much more difficult. Because, again, the aura of the person is so much more different from everybody else's. And everyone else's is dragging that aura down and is causing more problems. Whereas the person who is relatively selfish doesn't even notice there's problems. They don't feel anybody else's aura negatively affecting them. They say, well, this is fine with me. I don't know what the problem is. What is the spiritual person having such a problem for? Because they are in a different realm. And their aura is being affected very differently from that of the more advanced elements of this, of humans. Okay, so what else can we do? I gave you a lot of warnings, I told you all this stuff, but what else can we do in terms of improving the length of life and the quality of life and the health and wealth and everything else of the life form itself? When I say wealth, I'm not talking about material like dollars, I'm talking about internal wealth. What else can we do? Well, as I told you, the electromagnetic energies and the energies that are connected to them that are again, called physical energies, those energies can be helped by improving the biochemistry of the body and the electromagnetic nature of the field. Let's start with the biochemistry of the body. It's a little easier to understand that, and then we'll move to the electromagnetic energy of the field. The biochemistry of the body can be improved when you decrease the rate of oxidation that is caused by free radicals within the body. Remember I said at the beginning of the show that oxidation is a process of making heat so that energy can move in and out. Without heat, energy doesn't move. If we freeze ourselves, we could be even dead, but not yet dead, because the energy isn't moving, but we can revive ourselves in some rare circumstances. But if the energy is being wasted by oxidation in random order, it's called free radicalization, then that's a serious problem. And it wastes tremendous amounts of energy. There's a thing called the mitochondria. I know it's a fancy word. It's a little, like, think of it as a little energy-making part of the cell. It takes oxygen and various types of energy-producing foods, phosphates and other things, and it produces movement in the cell and in the body. Yeah, on a cellular level, everything I told you about can be seen. It's really cool. And so that's great. Now, if you have a lot of substances called peroxides and other things that are running around your body that are free radicals, so what they do is they attack the cell. They attack the cell by taking energy out of the mitochondria and wasting it and short-circuiting it and aging it and destroying it. Little molecules fall apart and burn up and break up. New molecules are made that are toxins, toxic wastes caused by a incomplete burning cycle. So you get polluted cells, just like we have polluted air. It's an incomplete burning cycle. And this produces a lack of movement or a irregular kind of movement. Both have very big dangers in the physical body, and they have produced a whole slew of different kinds of diseases. These are internal diseases to ourselves. Then new other kinds of diseases that are opportunistic, parasitic diseases, be it the flu to strep throat, you name it, all this stuff can now attack us as well, because our immune systems are down, because the immune cells are also weakened by the same oxidation process, and because there is this energy that is moving around in an erratic way from one center to the next that is an opening for these diseases to come in and just have a heyday. And if you know about soul balance, that's how soul balance works. It stops some of that from happening. Okay? Now, a lot of people say, well, aren't you just talking about antioxidants? Not completely. Not really. Because antioxidants only have a minimal effect. You see, one of the problems is that if you introduce an antioxidant and it comes to an oxidizing free radical, you still get pollutants. And the body can become contaminated with a lot of pollutants, have a lot of other problems, even though you take a lot of antioxidants. And some people, taking a huge amount of antioxidants when they're so polluted could kill them, because it adds to increased amounts of pollution. So you have to be careful about how much you take based upon how what you need and what you can process at the time. Antioxidants can be very helpful, but they aren't the true complete answer. The real answer here is to stop this urgent activity of wrongful movement from happening. One of the ways to do that is to not eat things that produce free radicals. What we eat has a tremendous effect on our bodies. And it's strange, but the things that produce free radicals is what most people eat. You might ask yourself, why? Because they are trying to match. Okay, you ready for this? Now remember, I told you, I warned you, if you didn't understand the first part, it's going to be hard for you to understand the second part. Because they want to match in sensation the energy that is in their aura, in their magnetic field. It's an upside down problem. The person is sensing their own aura, their own magnetic field, and they want to ingest things that cause them to feel in sync with this badly designed chi energy in their aura, and that makes them feel better. So they eat the wrong things. I know, sounds crazy, but it's true. It's true. And so this is why we're drawn to these things. Why is white sugar, which is a very strong free radical, and white flour too, why are these so strongly sought after? Well, because it balances the person's physical body to issues in their aura, and they feel better. It's like almost like a drug. And so it's so crazy. You would say, well, but would they feel better if they got their aura straightened out? Yeah, but in order to straighten out their aura, they can't do that just by what they eat. They have to do that by what they do, what they think and then what they do, and how much they're in accord with God. Are they living virtuously? If you're not living virtuously, your aura is going to be in this more negative place. So the answer is twofold. Yes, you do have to start cleaning up your act. The more you eat of things that produce free radicals, the more you're going to grow old, and the faster this whole sequence of events moves towards death. But remember this. If you're not living virtuously, you're not necessarily going to feel good eating that stuff, and you'll only be able to do it for so long. And then next thing you know, you'll be out having a binge on alcohol or smoking dope or taking some other kind of clandestine drugs or a whole bunch of other things that might be terrible for your body. You see, there's an actual explanation for why people behave the way they do. I hope this is making some sense. If you want to cure people who are sugar fanatics or drug users or whatever, get them to start giving wisely to others so that they can do the same, and they will cure themselves. They've called it a 12-step program for a long time, and there's a good reason it works. It actually works because people start giving to those who are in the program and sometimes those outside as well. And they do ostensibly call it, you know, as part of God. I realize it's in this country, the United States, more connected to Christianity, but it could be to any religion. Yes, you do have to become more part of God. You have to accept God into your life, even if you don't have to follow a religion. But you do have to, because you need to be getting closer to the connection with your creator so that you can change your auric field. Otherwise, you can go on every diet and go into every treatment plan and try to do everything you can to stop smoking or whatever, and it's not going to work. Because this is the secret. You have a terrible imbalance. and you have to balance it with your behaviors toward God and with God, not just with the things you take in. But remember, the things you take in are very big in this situation. So even on a temporary basis, if you can reduce the free radicals, do so. I encourage you, if you can stop smoking, do so. Smoking creates more free radicals in the body than heroin or than alcohol. Isn't that hard to believe? Yeah, alcohol is not as bad on the body as smoking. I know that's hard to believe for those of you who are smokers and not drinkers. But the point is that, and I'm not saying that you should drink instead of smoke. I'm just trying to explain that, you know, we have like still 25-30% of our population on average that is smoking cigarettes or something. Free radicals and that, just terrible. And remember what it's doing to the aura. Remember the effect. If you have a lot of free radicals, you're going to have more trouble changing your aura to a positive direction. Smoking actually, and so does many other things, eating things that are bad for you, including eating meat. That's another story entirely, but I'll get to it if I can in a minute or two. All these things create the urge to not give. They reduce your thinking in a virtuous sense because there's a feedback loop between both sides. When one side's out of sync, the other side moves in the direction of being out of sync with it. It's very, very difficult to correct the problem. I hope this is making sense. I'm going a little bit faster here because I'm looking at the clock. Okay. Let's talk about meat for a second. I said I would. Okay. Meat creates free radicals. And it doesn't matter what kind of meat, although some people think beef is probably the worst. It might be because of stuff that they put in it. You know, but that's because they're adding chemicals that even aggravate what happens. What does the meat do? It tends to stimulate certain aggressive hormones because the way that the thing that was alive before you killed it died in most circumstances was a horrific way of death. And that outpours into the life system of that thing electromagnetic energy. Remember, it has life energy too. That is terribly fearful and hostile towards people in many circumstances and other terrible feelings, as well as it's filled with chemicals from its physical system, from terror. And you're ingesting that. And that's going to have an effect, therefore, on your aura, because you're ingesting that electromagnetic field. It's part of you. Remember, I said it could be inside or outside. And you're also ingesting all the hormonal chemicals and other things that are producing it. So that's a reason, and that's probably the most important reason why not to eat meat. And, of course, we are doing these terrible things into the things that we're eating as well. And it's actually easier and healthier to not eat meat. But you have to really, really pay attention to nutrition if you're going to do that. So don't think that everybody can choose that because their consciousness may not be high enough to come to the right answers about what they should and shouldn't eat if they could get into a lot of trouble. And I don't want people to do that necessarily. But you can achieve a healthy, very healthy state and be a vegetarian. You just need to be extremely aware of nutrition and what to eat in a balanced way, and especially about proteins, very important part of that process. Okay, so let me continue on. I've got maybe one more thing I can cover before we run out of time here. All right, so I hope this is making some sense to you. A lot here going on in the show today, and there's a lot to think about. If you want to live in a way that also stays as young as possible, then it's more than just getting rid of free radicals. Now you need to deal with the phosphate part of the gene. You're going to have to start dealing with this thing called the telomere, and you're going to have to keep grow that back up again. To reverse it, there's very few things that will do that. No matter what you take in antioxidants, there's almost nothing that reverses the end of the gene other than, yep, you got it, resveratrol. That's right. But it has to be in a certain form in a certain way. you have to take it with a certain kind of antioxidant because otherwise it gets destroyed in your body before it's used. And you have to take the right kind of form and other stuff. There may be other substances, but right now it looks like the number one winner is resveratrol. And there may be something better 5 years from now, 5 weeks from now, I don't know, but this is what the best that I am aware of. And what does it do? How does it achieve this result? Well, the plants that it comes from, it either comes from the skin of a grape or from the root of a plant called the knotweed. But what it's used for is to protect the plant, its cells, from damage due to either ultraviolet light, which is, in the grape's case, it makes the grapes turn from a sugary sweet substance to a kind of acid substance. It makes very bad grapes, by the way. And so it's got to protect the grape from that. Or if it's coming from the knotweed's a really smart plant, if you want to call it smart. And what it does in the knotweed is that it makes the plant capable of growing at a ferocious rate. And this is going to sound strange. Remember I told you how ultraviolet hurts the grapes? The knotweed grows from ultraviolet light. There's only a few plants on the whole planet that can absorb and directly grow from ultraviolet light. Most plants don't. People think they do, but they don't. Ultraviolet light kills crops. If we got rid of our ozone layer, most of the plants would die, but not the knotweed. The knotweed would have a great day. Because it creates this resveratrol, which makes it impervious to ultraviolet light. It makes it impervious to most forms of inorganic or non-living particulate types of radiation. Ultraviolet light is actually radiation. And it actually helps it to gain some ability to prevent being damaged by gamma rays. That's like nuclear fallout. So, that's amazing stuff. Now, how does it do it? Well, as best as known right now, and I can't say I know it for sure, it seems like it allows one cell to communicate to another cell, and the cells that are in the best shape are able to give to the cells that are in terrible shape by the use of resveratrol in a messenger kind of way, give to the other cells a ability on a genetic level to recreate the gene, the best gene pool that's in the body, and to bring the whole gene pool back up to the highest level possible that the body has at the time you start taking the resveratrol. It also acts as an antioxidant in this process, but that's not a good use of it because then it can't do this other work that is more important. And it takes the stop sign off of the number of times a cell can reproduce. That's a little bit different than just building telomeres. It also allows certain parts of the cell that are involved in the reproductive process to get younger themselves so that the cell, it just forgets that it has a stop sign. And it allows it to grow and grow and grow. Now, some people fear that this would produce cancer, but it actually is an anti-cancer thing. Because cancer does it in the exact opposite way. It does produce, we'll say, replication ad infinitum, but it does so without cooperation with other cells, whereas resveratrol tightens the cooperation from one cell to the next in the body and keeps it together as an organism, a strong organism. Because of this, you can take part of one of these plants, a piece of it, and throw it out, and it will grow another plant. That's an amazing thing. That's a real amazing thing. And it won't grow just any old plant, like it won't grow a mass like a cancer cell. It grows a plant just like the plant it came from. Wow. Okay, well, we're running out of time. I'm really excited about this. Okay. I hope this has helped. I don't feel like I did justice to this subject because it's a lot more complicated and there's a lot more to explain about this whole system. I just touched on it. Maybe we'll have another show in the not-too-distant future where I'll go into deeper about this. The only problem is that I'd have to bring you all up to the same speed again. And as you saw, you had to kind of know the first half to know the second, and et cetera. Okay, so I just let you know that if you have a chance, I talked about resveratrol tonight, you can call and you can try some. You can try some of the best stuff I know of from foreveryoungproducts.com. And no, I didn't do this show to sell their product, but I think it's relevant to talk about it. 800-777-7850. You can buy some from them. Ideal self-sorption, resveratrol. It really is the best stuff. I use it. And you can also get some for your pets. They have a pet formula called VF. And check it out. Okay, we're out of time for right now. I hope this has been interesting. It has been interesting to me just to talk about it. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is. Thank you.